So it just happened by accident.
Yeah.
It's like everything else in life. Everything else in life, right? All the
exactly.
Wow. So he was being realistic. He said 3 years you make six figures.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. He was very being very realistic about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, yeah. I mean, that sounds pretty good.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Chris Sean Talks. This is actually going to be episode number 3, but I didn't upload my other episode yet. So yeah, actually, you're episode number 2. And so on this episode we have right now is Yihua, who is a lead software engineer at, which company is that again? You are a lead software engineer at Bonsai, which is a really cool name. I don't know the name of the, I don't know the company, but that's a cool name. And you're also an instructor for Zero to Mastery, right?
Yeah.
Nice. Well, yo, Yihua, I really appreciate you being on here, dude. I'm excited to have you here. I was worried that I would have to wait until I think September or October to have you on this podcast because you're going to do some traveling soon, right? Or vacation.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm super excited to be here, especially to talk a little bit about how you went on your journey too. I'm kind of going through like a similar kind of transition myself. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely interested in more and more this, I guess, a conversational aspect that you've managed to do for yourself in your career. So I know it's meant to be, I guess, I don't know if it's an interview for me, but like, I'd love to just
it's a conversation. It's a conversation. I mean, yeah, if you want to interview me, it's cool, but it's a conversation, right? I talk about anything and everything. Well, first of all, I mean, people are here because they also want to hear about you as well, right? But so right now, I am curious, you are a lead engineer. How long have you been doing software engineering, by the way?
Just over 8 years now.
8 years now. Okay, so you got experience. And now you're an instructor for ZTM, which you've been doing for about, what, 2 years?
A little over two and a half years.
2.5 years? Oh. Okay, so you're an engineer for 5 years, right? You decided to become an instructor for ZTM. And ZTM's only been around for like, what, 4 years, 5 years? Maybe less. So were you the second instructor?
Yeah, I was after Andre.
Really? Yeah. Wow. Okay. So you're an engineer for X amount of years. Why did you decide to do this? Is it because you just knew Andre, right? The Andre that never shows his face anywhere on the internet. You just happened to know him.
So it's kind of interesting because me and Andre had worked together actually at this great Toronto startup. Not even a startup, sorry. A great Toronto developer shop.
Yeah.
Called Wrangle. We're consultancy. Actually, that's what we were. At the time, I was consulting for a client that was based out of Spain, but I was living in Amsterdam. So for Wrangle. At the time, I had some visa issues that were not really resolved. It was like a complicated kind of situation. So I was actually out there and I had to quit my job at Wrangle due to my visa issues. And I had 6 months on my hands before me and my partner at the time, we were going to move to San Francisco.
Yeah.
So in the time, I was like, well, you know, before I became even a software engineer, I was a instructor for like athletes. I was teaching them how to do like Olympic lifting, strength and conditioning training.
Oh, so do you body lift and et cetera now?
Yeah, I still do. Nice. I do it, but at a much less degree, of course.
Do you have a home gym or do you prefer to work out at a gym?
I do a mix. I have a couple friends who I have a lot of workout equipment with that we work out there, but then I'll go to a gym as well. It just really depends on the mood of it. But at the time I was thinking actually about doing like, something in the fitness space, but in terms of video content, cause I knew that at the time the course e-learning thing was starting to really bubble. But then luckily for me, actually one of my other colleagues who was actually my lead on, multiple projects that we had done at Wrangle, he got reached out to by Andre and then Andre passed on that opportunity to me through his referral. Lead engineer, Abdella. So it was like very serendipitous because I thought about doing video content stuff. Andre was looking for an instructor and then just happened through our connections.
Wow.
That's how I got.
So it just happened by accident.
Yeah.
It's like everything else in life. Everything else in life, right?
Exactly.
But the thing is, the opportunity came, but you were ready for the opportunity though. though, right? Like, it's not like the opportunity was there. You had no experience in engineering whatsoever. You had the experience and et cetera. And boom, you took a chance on you. So hold on. Why did he choose to work with you?
What Andre?
Was it? Yeah. What was it? Like, what? You had no experience prior to that. Because I saw you do some stuff in Udemy. Maybe that was with Andre. I don't know.
That was with Andre. So we did Udemy, and then Andre started Zero to Mastery afterwards. I actually came in just as he was thinking about starting Zero to Mastery because of the rocket ship that he built that is, you know, Zero to Mastery now. But at the time, I think one big reason is because Andre and I always had good conversations with each other, even though they were kind of brief. That helped. But secondly, and this is all props to Andre. He himself was willing to take a chance. Like, he knew what he was looking for to some degree. And I think just based off our connection, to some degree, he was like, okay, let me try it out. Let me see how it works. Because I was the first instructor other than him that he took a risk on, right?
Yeah.
And whether or not the students was going to be warm to me or welcome me was a risk that he was taking in the first place. But I think one other really large factor is the fact that a lot of us from Wrangell really trust each other. Wrangell was like a very special place for almost all of us who have been there.
Yeah.
It's like the moment that we hear, oh, you're ex-Wrangell, it's like a huge stamp of approval. It's just like we all went through so much together at that company because it's a phenomenal company that really bred like very stellar, well-rounded engineers. So I think that really helped. It's kind of like there was enough. You know, it's kind of like, I guess, in the U.S., if you guys are like Yale grads, it's like you guys have like a
just get that thing. Camaraderie.
Yeah.
Nice. That makes sense. So, I mean, the thing is, though, like that risk that he took on you, you know, that could either cause the company to fail or, et cetera, succeed. But then again, that depends on your commitment. Like, you don't know how well this can go. You don't know where ZTM's going at the time. You're the second instructor. I'm not sure if Mackenzie was around yet as a COO at the time. Not yet, right? So, but, you know, a CEO is important though, because I have my own business now and it's bringing like 25 to 50K per month right now.
And wow.
Like, I am going crazy. Like,
yeah.
Because I work 20 hours, it feels like 20 hours a day, maybe like 18 hours a day, right? So 100 hours a week minimum. And so running a business, focusing on the money aspect, the sponsorships, the marketing, I'd rather we're focused, this is my YouTube channel, with sponsorships and stuff. And like, so I had to hire someone who's like a CEO, who's not, but he actually gets a percentage of whatever I make, not just a salary. And I could see why it's so important. And hiring people who can help me make content, like he hired you to help, you know, create content, because doing all this stuff is so difficult. And so I see the importance of the first people you hire are extremely important. I fired two people already because if they're not going to help right away, like what I learned from Gary Vee, who is the reason I did YouTube, you hire fast and you fire fast. If you don't see them helping right away, you know, you have to let them go. And that's it's going to affect my pockets in the future too. So what I'm trying to bring up is the fact that he chose to hire you shows a lot of trust, right? That's a big deal. Seeing where ZTM is now with how many employees, 14 employees right now.
Yeah. And then probably even more instructors. I think the instructor count is really high. I haven't gotten the new number, but it's either 20 or more close to it. It's somewhere lingering there. It's crazy. I mean, it's a rocket ship, right?
Yeah.
I think one thing that helped was that Andre and I before at Wrangell, before we both became software engineers, we were actually both entrepreneurs ourselves. So I totally relate to you on that part about hiring fast and firing fast, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had my own gym. I mean, I totally understand. Yeah.
That's actually one of my dreams. So I want to create a bootcamp that teaches people for free, where people can go for, like legit bootcamp if I produce that enough money, right? Or get, you know, if my channel does well, get companies to sponsor that so I can pay the instructors. And then have my own gym. Literally just
like a coding bootcamp.
Yeah, legit coding bootcamp.
I was a part of actually a big one that was free.
Really?
In Toronto. Yeah, it was called Bridge. It's not around anymore, but at the time...
Well, if it was free, it makes sense.
But it wasn't actually the... it wasn't the money that was the problem. There was like some other like political issues that came up, but it was very, very successful because it primarily helped women and people of color find a foothold into the industry. And its model was very interesting and it worked. It was actually very successful.
That's definitely the goal. And I think that's what I'm really passionate about because, you know, it took me a long time to reach a 6-figure salary because there was no one to guide me. It took me a long time to find a decent job or negotiate because there's no one to guide me. And so that's my goal, to be able to help people, right? If not, maybe just offer a lot of scholarships for people who can afford it, can pay, et cetera, right? So I don't know how that works, but that's my end goal, because I just love helping people in general. But that's awesome, though. So you know what it takes to work, the kind of work it takes to make something succeed, right? And the way I see things, and this is what I, when I spoke with Andre, because I had a meeting with him, we were talking about maybe I can help with the YouTube channel. My interview, it was supposed to be an interview, but it felt like I was interviewing him because I just asked him so many questions. It went from a 30-minute interview to a 60-minute just conversation about YouTube and business. He's super passionate about it. And I could see, I mean, if you were, you know, that had that entrepreneurial mindset, I could see why he hired you too. So how has that been though? Right. So I'm stalking you right now. I'm looking at your LinkedIn. So you were at your current company for 1.5 years. Prior to that, two years in 1 month. You've been at DTM for almost 3 years. Mm-hmm. So you switch jobs like a normal engineer every year and a half to 2 years, like everyone does. I switch job maybe every 10 months. Shoot, I hope no, my boss doesn't listen to this. But like, so you're still at DTM. Why?
I mean, I really like working with Andre and DTM. Andre really lets me kind of do the creative side.
Yeah.
Or I guess like in my side of it, just the kind of work that I want to do, which is mainly doing the courses. Yeah. He built this machine around us instructors so that they find us opportunities like this one that I'm having with you right now on this podcast. They presented it to me about whether or not I want to do it. There were numerous other opportunities as well. And it's not just Mackenzie. There's like Scott.
Scott.
And he was actually part of our conversation when he connected us. So it's really just, there's so much that gets done behind the scenes to make this whole thing work, right? From the marketing to the ideas. I actually built our current iteration of the website, Zero to Mastery, with a developer team. Yeah, in ZTM.
Nice.
And at the time, we were
running it. You're not using, hold on. You mean the homepage, not the, is that CRM? See it, whatever it is. You built the landing page, you called it that, or the everything? The
entire... Yeah, so there's essentially two parts of, I guess, like Zero to Mastery. There is the student portal, which is
student portal,
like the landing page, the blog, the career path, and some other stuff that we're constantly working on. And then there is the actual academy. So the academy, we use a third-party tool called Teachable for.
There you go. Teachable.
Yeah, exactly. So I had worked on that prior with the team internally to develop that solution.
Nice.
Yeah, so that was kind of just always the great thing, as I was saying, about the culture of Zero to Mastery is just that Andre's got ideas, and he's also got this very fervent passion for not only the business, but importantly, like your happiness. He really cares that you're happy doing what you're doing.
There's even a course on happiness.
Yeah.
On DTM. Yeah. There's a course on happiness on DTM.
Andre's always been like, hey, if you want to do this, you can do it. If you don't want to do it, that's fine, right? Like, you can find, if it was in a way that we can work together. If not, right? Like, you know, we're still friends, right? Like, that's, that culture is very important, right?
Yeah.
And over working with Andre, it's just so easy, right? Like, even the fact that I'm able to do this huge, indefinite amount of time where I'm about to go traveling and et cetera, and work on some of my own stuff. I mean, Andre's always been supportive of that. He's always been trying to push that for all of us, right? Just to have like this kind of lifestyle.
That is amazing. That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, that's hard to find too, right? And I mean, unfortunately, I have that in my current full-time job. I'm not sure how long I'll be here, but I love it. It's pretty amazing. So before we continue on talking about all the things that you're doing, even I want to talk about like what you plan on doing for the next month or so. The fact that we had to do an interview so soon is pretty funny. But what were you doing before tech, right? Like you were a software engineer. Did you do the normal route where you went to college, got your four-year degree, became a software engineer, self-taught, boot camp?
Yeah. So before I became an engineer, I was actually as I mentioned, I was an Olympic lifting instructor. I had a gym. I had a partner that I was working with, and we were primarily training hockey players. And
do you know this drink? If you like working out, do you know 3D Energy?
No, I don't. I feel like I've been out of the space for so long.
But didn't you want to do like a finish? You don't know Christian Guzman or Max Schuning?
I think I've heard of the names. These are kind of, I think, like the newer fitness influencers.
Oh, okay,
right?
True. Okay, yeah. No, they kind of.
I know
OG
some
now.
Of the ones now. Yeah. Oh, are they? Are they? Yeah. Oh, I actually don't know.
Oh,
I think
wow.
I think the ones that I know now are maybe like Greg Doucette. Jeff Nippard.
Yeah.
More plates, more dates, Derek, right? Like it's, for sure. I think they're more of the science backed.
Yeah. Like really, so the ones I watch were like the vlogger fitness YouTubers.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I didn't that do that. Sense. I didn't do or get into those ones.
Okay, cool. You save time. Nice.
Yeah. So before that, I was doing that. And I just happened to meet at my ex-girlfriend's party, the CEO of Bitmaker, which was a Toronto-based boot camp.
Yeah.
And at the time, I had developed like mild sciatica because I was the only person really doing all the Olympic lifting for all of our athletes. So I was doing maybe like 8 hours a day of Olympic lifting, which is very aggressive on the lower back. And I learned a lot of it myself, which is actually in retrospect, like quite, I guess, a little dangerous in that sense.
Yeah.
Especially given the progress that we've made now in terms of the knowledge of how to get there. I'd done a couple like courses with a couple people to figure out like, you know, my technique and et cetera, but it was just that I was the one constantly doing it and you can't do that much training on that specific type of lifting. So I was looking for a way out already. I met the CEO and he told me, he's like, hey, you do our boot camp and in 3 years you could be making like a six-figure salary. You don't need a prior background.
So he was being realistic. He said 3 years you make six figures.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
He was very being very realistic about it.
Yeah, yeah. Nice.
And I was like, yeah, I mean, that sounds pretty good. So I started the boot camp and then, you know, that's how it all started, right?
Nice.
There were other draws, of course. I think like the idea of remote living seemed really appealing. And other than that as well, I think it was just, I don't know. My degree is not in software engineering or engineering. My degree is in philosophy and political science. But my philosophy specialization was in logic and rational thinking.
Which is perfect. Which is perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think in terms of that, I saw a lot of overlap in the way that programming and then these kind of like logical axiom calculations were. In fact, they're almost used exclusively as a baseline for a lot of computer engineering, at least at the very base level.
Yeah.
So I saw that and I was like, okay, I think I can do this. And then from there, that's kind of how I started.
Nice. That's awesome. And so that was what, 5 years ago? No, you said you've been in tech for 8 years, right?
Yeah, so that was about 8 years ago.
That was 8 years ago. So compared to what you thought your life in tech would be compared to now. Right. Like, for example, I was living in my car 6 years ago.
Wow.
Now, like, you know, like money's not a problem. But the thing is, I never thought I would ever have as much money. You know what I mean? I never thought I'd be able to earn what I earn now. And just the lifestyle of freedom. And if I'm not happy, find a new job. Well, maybe not in a recession. But after the recession, find a job like that. Right. It was like that until maybe literally a month ago. But how is your life now compared to tech before? Because a lot of people who are watching this channel are people who are aspiring engineers. People who work in tech are still early in the career because I don't teach anything technical. Like everyone else does that. I let them do that. But like, how is your life now compared to before? Did you expect to be where you are today, et cetera?
I think so. I'm not going to lie in the sense that like,
wow,
I think
my confident.
Yeah. I think a lot of my entrepreneurial spirit, always drove in my head that it was either I was going to make it or I was going to break it. Right.
Yeah.
Like it was one way or the other. I mean, since I was like 13, I think I tried to be an entrepreneur. I was like selling magic cards when I was 13 online.
Dang.
I just always expected. I think I think I just always anticipated that like I had to succeed no matter what. And software engineering was just one way for me to do it. That was even why I jumped at the opportunity too. Cause I was like, hey, I mean, I'm used to taking risks. Like, let me try it.
Yeah.
Worst case, I've learned something that I don't want to do, or I found something that maybe I'm not good at, and then I'll continue to figure out what I'm good at. Right. Like, I think so much of it is just trying to figure it out. And I guess it's kind of like that hustler's mentality. I mean, you must have it too in order for you to even get here from your car, right? Like that.
Yeah.
That's an easy way to climb out of.
I mean, I grew up rich. Right, my parents were rich. Not anymore. They were, and they just didn't know how to handle money, which I'm learning from their mistake. Right.
Mm.
So now I support them now. But I grew up having everything, and so I was spoiled as hell. Like to the point where we would have the most expensive cars, and I would think I was better than everyone. because that's how my parents were thinking. That's how they thought. Oh, they got the cheap version, the poor version of a Porsche. You know, I'm like, what's the poor version of a Porsche? That, okay, right? But then we lost everything. You know, I became homeless. It became humble as hell. And so, like, I never had that until I was living in my car, and until I had to ask my mom, who also barely had enough money to eat, for money so I can eat, right? And so, like, that's when my mindset completely changed. So I wasn't always like that until I lost everything, which I'm so thankful for. Because I feel like my family would be taken care of forever. My family's, you know, my kids. That's the goal, at least. So yeah, I didn't have that, but now I have that, which I think not a lot of people have until you really understand how it feels like to have nothing, right? If my parents never lost their business that was making so much money, dude, like I have no idea where I'd be right now. Like, I'd just be playing games. I mean, it's not bad playing games all day, but I didn't have a chance to grow up the way I had to, right? That's amazing, though.
I had a kind of similar experience. I think my dad lost the first company that he had when I was around 13, which is probably why I started to try and, like, find a way to make more money to try and... I mean, I was 13. I was just like, is there a way for me to support the family? I mean, I'm really good at Magic the Gathering. Maybe I can try and sell some cards. And I actually ended up working pretty well. Nice. I sold, like, $6,000 worth of cards when I was, like, 13. It was, like... I think that's a lot of money for a
13-year-old.
I might.
That's a lot of money right now.
Yeah, and I gave almost all of it to my mom. Yeah,
that's so nice.
I gave almost all of it to my mom, and I was like, maybe I could do something. So I guess, like, circling back to your question, right?
Wow.
I think that's part of it. I think also, like, I grew up, like, so I'm a first generation immigrant here, and I kind of learned English, like, watching TV and, like, listening to rap music, and I, like, really got into Jay-Z, like, really got
into
Jay-Z.
Did you try to write your own lyrics,
especially
too?
Especially his first album. No, I always knew that rap was not for me. I'm very happy being a consumer, you know? But it's very, very inspirational. A lot of that hustle mentality, right? That idea that you come from nothing, which I didn't. I'm not going to ever say that I came from nothing. My parents are also very successful in their own right, and they gave me a lot of opportunity moving me here and everything. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like, there's a very distinct line I remember that I always resonated with about Jay. Actually, it's from a recent album. I have it tattooed, but I had a similar thought about his music back then, but I have a lyric of his tattooed from his latest album, which is 444, and it's Lord, we know who we are, yet we know not what we may be, so maybe I'm the one, or maybe I'm crazy. And it's just like, I've always loved that mentality, right? We know who we are now, but we don't know who will be in the future.
I like that.
So I'm gonna believe that I'm gonna be somebody one day, or I'm insane, but those are the only two options for me. So it's like, you know,
but that's the mentality you have to have, like, though, to succeed. Like, without that mentality, unless
100%.
You force yourself to believe that, even though you do whatever it takes, even trick yourself to believe that, that is a mindset you need, though, because it is normal it's normal to live paycheck to paycheck in America. It's normal to to not be able to afford to fix your flat tire, oil change. I remember when I went to get my labs done before I can, you know, at the doctor's, and someone was complaining that they had to pay an extra $20 to get their test. I'm like, that's only $20. And then I remembered, oh shoot, that was me a couple of years ago. I just don't live in that. You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy the things people go through. And, like, the thing is, unless you have that mindset, unfortunately, you might stay there unless you do something about it, right? It's really interesting you say that, though, because when we lost everything, I got so used to just living paycheck to paycheck for, like, what, 7 years, 8 years. That's all I knew. And I thought that would be me for the rest of my life.
Wow.
I never had the mindset that, like, I would ever make good money. I had the mindset, all right, I only could apply to customer service jobs, nothing specialized, living, you know, making $18 an hour for the rest of my life, which is not a lot in California, not even close. I would never be able to afford a family. I need to marry maybe some girl who makes good money, a pharmacist, whatever, to live that nice life, right? I never thought that I would make it to where I am today, and especially as an entrepreneur, I feel like I'm a late bloomer when it comes to being an entrepreneur, because I thought I wasn't one, and it's because I have an anxiety, and so because of that anxiety, I was always worried of, all right, depending on, I'd rather have someone just give me the money, know it's coming in, knowing it's coming in, but I didn't realize that work ethic, the skill, the determination to push through when, like, even when everyone doubts you, I had all of that. And so now, like, now realizing the potential, even, like, for example, my YouTube channel, like, I'm really willing. So, okay, I received a job offer from Brex and Coinbase for $400,000 a year. And I said no to it. I said no because I love my job. I even told my manager, Endeavor, at my current job, and I rejected it. He's like, why? first of all, I don't ever do things just for the money. I do things because I love it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, now YouTube is making me more money than I do in tech, right? Like, just in sponsorships that I've signed this month, it's $25,000 in sponsorships alone, not including the affiliates with ETM, by the way, not including AdSense, not including my clothing line, et cetera. And like, it is scary to know that I'm about to make even more than double what I make in tech in 1 month. Like, why should I keep doing my full-time job? And I'm so scared about that. But if this continues for the next 2 to 3 months, I'm willing to leave my $250,000 job to do YouTube full-time. Number one, they'll pay a lot more, but it's also a higher risk because I could be making $500,000 a year by next year if I wanted in tech.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
it's
scary, but the opportunity, like, you don't get these opportunities every day.
Yeah. And I think also the tech jobs are always waiting for you. You know what I mean? Like, if you've gotten the offer once, you'll get the offer again, unless, like, this recession wipes out the entire industry somehow in some way that we can't even see.
I don't think this will affect content creators, though, because businesses need content creators to get their stuff out there.
Yeah, but like let's say, right? Unless some apocalyptic event happens in tech, like it's always waiting for you. You can always come back to this, right?
Yes, and I might get paid a little bit lower when I come back, but I'll just grow my income, and I could always come back.
Yeah,
that's true.
Exactly, and it's a marathon, not a sprint, right?
True.
I think it's exactly as you were saying about it.
Yeah, I think for me it's because number one, I support my parents. Right, I help with their rent, whatever bills they need. My fiance, I help support her now. I got two dogs, and then now I have how many employees? Three employees, not employees, the contractors, but yeah, three people who work under me who depend on me to put food on the table now. So all these different responsibilities, having that extra X amount of dollars from my job to come in every month that's consistent helps, and then trying to build this business. But I feel like it comes to a point for me personally where if I keep working full time, I'm making this much money. My current job will only limit me from succeeding that. It's a risk, but I'm willing to take that risk. I am. So we'll see. But I mean, so that's what I'm trying to say is I never thought I had that entrepreneurial mindset or courage that I think you need and determination to do it. And it's crazy to see that I do have that. And one thing I noticed about me is I risks don't really affect me. Like quitting a job with no job waiting for me, I don't care. I'll figure it out. Like it doesn't really affect me in the way I guess it does other people now. But yeah, so that's cool to just trying to show that I kind of do relate to that in a way where, you just figure out a way to make it work. And that's something I love doing. I'm addicted to it now.
Well, I think a lot of it too is that like it's timing too, right? Like a lot I think there's a lot of this weird like hashtag entrepreneur culture that is very like toxic to people who think about being entrepreneurs because you think that you always have to be a hustler or you always have to have the mentality. And I'm ironically saying this as somebody who like was telling you that when I was 13, I was like, oh, I got to be a hustler. But like you go through waves, right? Like I have way more failures trying to be an entrepreneur than not. I've made like whiskey. I've tried to open a gym. Shoot. Yeah, I've done like so many weird different things, right? Because of this idea that like, I'm like, oh, I always got to be moving. But sometimes the opportunity is not right and you can force it or you can't, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think you're also constantly growing as a person. You're always evolving from your experiences. And sometimes like in Chinese culture, we have a saying where it's like you need... it's got to be the right people. You have to be in the right place. And even when you have that, if it's not the right time, the timing of the heavens is not right, it's also not the right time for you, right? Yep. So I think that's the thing. So it's not to say that you think you were an entrepreneur or you had the entrepreneur ability at the time. It's just that maybe the timing wasn't right for you. The opportunity didn't come in a way that like inspired you to take this shot and take this risk, right? And maybe if you tried back then, maybe that thing wouldn't have worked. But now it's crushing it, right?
Yeah.
Actually, on that note, my question for you, actually. So you work a full-time job. This is with Airbyte, right?
Yeah. As a developer.
This is as dev.
Dev.
Right. Mm-hmm. So what you have your main YouTube channel.
Yep. And a second YouTube channel.
What's your main?
Chris Sean.
And a second YouTube channel.
Yeah. So Chris Sean is my main YouTube channel. I just started, so that channel's at 116K subs. And you know, interesting thing about my YouTube channel. I've been doing YouTube since, I've been documenting my journey from living in my car to where I am today on YouTube. So from when I got my first job, to getting laid off, to getting a new job, to get to being, from quitting a job on the spot twice, right? Shared everything. And so been doing YouTube for 5 to 6 years. YouTube never really paid well. Sponsors never really reached out. And, you know, I thought my channel was dead a year ago. And so I figured, you know what? I'm just going to try to upload content 5 times this month. Let's just see what happens. Boom. Channel starts growing again. Getting more views than channels that have 500K subs. Hopefully it stays that way. And so when I saw how successful it was being, after uploading consistently again, now 3 to 4 to 5 sponsors are reaching out every single week. Hey, Chris, we'll pay you $2,000. Wow. What? $2,000 for a 60-second mention? I used to only charge $300 for this. What's going on?
Yeah.
Right? Because I have the check mark now and 100K plus subs. And then now, you know, it went from making only 3 to 4K a month from YouTube, AdSense sponsors, to then 10. And now it's at 25 right now. And then next month going up and up and up. And so, and the reason this is happening now, though, not just because I'm uploading consistently, I'm putting effort to actually make good content. My cinematic quality, my videos, I'm changing. Hiring a video editor, helping the editor improve, hiring a channel manager, hiring an assistant to respond to sponsorships because I can't respond to all, you know, like, so. And then now, like, I invested in $5,000 more of a camera equipment, right? So really trying to elevate that level. And so, like, yeah, so that's how the opportunity presented to myself. And the thing is, like you said, you can try so many things for years and it fails. I have friends who blew up on YouTube after me. I have friends who are making more money on YouTube than me. And I'm like, dude, I started YouTube before them. I share everything to my breakups. What's going on? This is not fair. And out of nowhere, I make more money on YouTube than tech. Out of nowhere, just like that. Right?
Yeah.
So you never know. But the thing is to be ready for those opportunities to come.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the thing too, right? That's life too. It's it often comes to you when you least expect it. It's kind of actually, in a weird way, been the weird lesson that I've been learning in my life, especially as of late. And I think, like, a lot of that, it's opportunity in anything. I don't even think it's just tech.
Yeah.
And I don't even think it's just business. I think just, like, in your regular life, sometimes when you're trying to force it, it doesn't come to you. And then when you kind of, like, let go a little, then it suddenly comes to you, right? Mm-hmm. And it's the weird irony of life. I think there's actually a... I don't want to say, I read about this recently, and I think it's like a theory that like the less you look for something, the more you find it. I think it's a topic of love. It's like when you're really trying to find your life partner, they don't come to you. The moment you stop looking, suddenly they appear.
Yeah. I mean, that happened to me too in my relationship. No, I agree. and I think, you know, when you try too, I don't know, it feels like when you try too hard, you make mistakes, I feel like if you just really let it come and you focus on just yourself, and that everything else naturally comes. Even when it comes to YouTube. No one can say I got lucky on YouTube because I never had a viral video. I had videos that reached 700K views over 3 years. That's not viral. Right? That's it. I've never had a viral video. I had to do YouTube the long way. Which I'm thankful for because, you know, people don't see, hey, this person has 1 million subscribers. He only gets 20, maybe. So right now I'm averaging 30K views per video. But he only gets 30K views per video for someone with 1 million subs. That's not good. Sponsors would pay even less, right? So now that I'm averaging 30K plus per video, hopefully it goes up. When you average out, then sponsors pay more. So like, I'm really thankful for this opportunity, you know. But yeah, so you asked. So I do two YouTube channels, and I also manage Airbuds YouTube channel. Why'd you ask that? Was there another question you had?
No, I'm just curious about the kind of businesses that you're
yeah.
Doing,
right? So that's like, if you want, sorry. I interrupted you. I get so excited talking about YouTube. I love YouTube. Wait, is there something else you were saying?
No, I was just curious. Oh. I just wanted to hear it because I had read about yourself when I got presented this podcast opportunity. Except I just didn't see your main channel, Chris Sean, because I think you linked me your Spotify and
Spotify.
The podcast that we're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
And then I saw your Airbyte. I just read what was in the email. Like, I watched that stuff. So, I mean, it's awesome to hear that you've got all. I didn't even know you had like this over 100,000. Subscriber channel.
You decided to get a podcast?
That's really cool.
Thank you. So I had a hiring manager recently who reached out to me. I've been looking for one. The thing is, it's hard to find someone who's good. So this person reached out to me. I wasn't sure they were good, and they're really good. And he presented all these business ideas and how we can, you know, generate more income and not selling out to the audience. So, you know, and the fact that this person wouldn't. So I feel like when someone else negotiates for me, and when I CC more people to sponsors, in the email, it just shows that you have kind of more power. You know, you have more leverage because you have a team behind you. It's not just one small creator, it's actual team. So I hired him to do that. And some business aspects that we're thinking of is a Patreon, right? But check this out. On the Patreon, for example, I'm going to buy the new, what do you call that? What's the name of that monitor? Samsung Odyssey Arc. It's
the G9.
It's like a TV, but you can actually turn it like this angle. It's insane. It's about $3,500. I'm gonna buy that, and I'm gonna do a giveaway. I'm gonna give away that. I don't need the money. I'm gonna give it away, but I'm gonna give it to away to whoever you know is on my Patreon, right?
Yeah,
and etc. And that's one way to generate extra income. So business aspects like that, creating more content, and now these podcasts, and which I generally believe will do better than my main channel, hopefully down the road, more sponsors, right? That, right? You know, so if I'm already doing 25, 30K per month on sponsorships with the podcast, not even including that, how much more would that go up? And the great thing about this is the fact that I get to make a living helping people, which is insane,
yeah.
Right? Which is mind-boggling because, like, I was a kid, I have dyslexia, I grew up with a speech impediment, I couldn't even talk well. And now my job is to talk for a living, even for my full-time job, right? So, yeah, I do have a clothing line called Developer Branded, which I don't promote anymore. I should promote it. I'm going to work with a designer to create new designs, make it more legit, and then start paying, like, legit YouTubers a salary every month to just wear my clothes on the channel all the time, on Instagram posts.
Yeah.
So that's another goal. Test it out with some legit Instagram people, YouTube, TikTokers, you name it. So... I want to work full time as long as possible while I grow my business, so that every dollar that comes into the business literally goes straight back into it. Because right now I get after taxes, I get about $12,000. That's a lot. My bills are only $7,000 per month, right? So if I just live off that, then have more savings, the least money I take out of the business, the more I can use to grow and generate more income, So that's my goal, right?
Yeah.
I live in a really small house. I sold my Porsche for a Honda CR-V. Because I'm like, nope, I just want to spend as little money as possible. And then later, you know, when I'm 40, which is only 5 years from now, live a really nice life.
Oh, damn, you look young, bro.
Really? How old do I look?
You 32? Look mad young, yeah. I thought you were like 20, I thought you were like 25, 20.
Oh, dude, that's why I have an ultra wide lens. It doesn't show my pores. Yeah, I still have hair, though. I still have hair. So that's kind of crazy. No, appreciate that, though. But yeah, so that's my goal, man. So, enough about me, though. Everyone knows about me on my channel. So, you. Okay. Full-time engineer and instructor. How the hell do you manage that? Because I'm managing three YouTube channels, and I might hopefully can help with ZTM if they decide to go with me, which is a lot of work. But I love it. That's why it's fun and easy for me. But how do you do that, dude? Like, full-time engineer and instructor. I hate doing tutorials. Like, how do you manage all this?
I think for me, a lot of it... So, it's two things, right? The first is that I don't... I think life comes in cycles, and especially as an instructor, I think it's super critical for me, especially as an instructor. I primarily teach around the industry. Like, I teach React, and I teach Cracking the Fang Interview. Those are my two main courses. And the next course I'm going to do is System Design, and then the fourth one I think is Senior software engineering, the non-technical parts. I think like those next two, for me, I think it's always been important to me that the person learning from me needs to know that I'm doing the thing that I'm teaching you, right? Yeah. Because if I'm not doing it, like for example, Carbon just came out and then there's Carbon tutorials, right? And it's like how you can teach the basics of Carbon, but you can't teach it to scale. You can't teach it in a work environment. You can't teach it in the different cases there might have been, right? Because you don't have the exposure yet. It's so new, right? Yeah. Unless you're from Google, then maybe.
Yeah.
But I think, like, for me, it's always been important that I teach only, and this is kind of my absolute axiom for my teaching. I do not teach you something I do not believe in. Because I get student requests all the time about this library and this tool and this thing. And if I don't agree with it, I'm not going to teach it. Because I'm like, I would rather not teach something that I'm don't believe in rather than teach you something just because you want to learn it from me. And I'm so grateful to all my students that are asking me for it.
Even though if it might generate you more income, why? Is it because you think you generally believe you'll create better You'll bring more value in the content you create.
I think with anything, right? Like, you're constantly mired with self-doubt, right? We are mired with self-doubt. We have imposter syndrome. It comes from this career is known for imposter syndrome, right?
Yep.
And I think it's especially important in order to combat that is imposter syndrome is kind of like you get backed into a corner where you're like, oh my God, maybe I don't know this, right? Or I'm unsure. And that lack of certainty is what gives you this insecurity. So for me, at the very least, if I like have a strong belief in this thing that I'm teaching, like one example is that I'm a fervent functional programming guy. Like for me, the paradigm that I believe in is functional programming. So if that is my baseline, as long as I'm teaching that, even if somebody disagrees and they're like, well, what about class-based? What about like another pattern, right? That's fine. Those are all viable solutions. I'm just not going to teach it. But if you were to put me in a corner and ask me about functional programming, I can die on that hill. You know what I mean? Like that for me is more important. I think like at the end of the day, the only way that we can not get lost in the sauce is you have to figure out what you're willing to stand for, right? You know that saying, like you got to stand for something or you fall for everything.
Yep.
I'm a strong believer of that, especially in my coursework, right? Because a lot of times students will ask me, this new version of React just came out, right? Can you teach it to me? And I'm like, listen, I haven't seen it at scale. I'm not comfortable teaching it to you because that's my thing. My thing is I'm going to teach you these patterns that are used at scale.
Yeah.
There are other instructors out there that will teach you everything with great depth and with great brilliance, right? As well, maybe even better than me, right? But for me to teach this thing, I need to be 100% certain that I've tested it, I've tried it, I've proven it. And if I haven't done that, I'm just not going to teach it. I'm just not comfortable.
I mean, when people come to me and they ask me about why not Code Academy or my why not Free Code Camp, the thing is I've been recommending ZTM behind the scenes before I even knew you had affiliate program. I was working with Treehouse for a long time, not working for them, but I was their affiliate. They suck. and so behind the scenes, because behind the scenes, whenever I meet people one by one, I'm like, you know, Treehouse is cool, but I really recommend ZTM. I was recommending you guys for a long time before that.
Oh, amazing.
And the reason is because you guys just don't teach what everyone teaches. And the fact that you said that, what you just said, proves what I generally believed, which is that you teach what you teach, but you really go above and beyond that. But even on top of that, you teach things that people can generally use and help them actually get the job, which is so important. Everyone does a to-do list. Everyone does tic-tac-toe tutorials. You name it, shopping cart list, calculator, whatever. But I generally believe, at least from what I've seen with the courses I've taken, that you guys actually do want to help your students. And of course, yeah, you want to collect money. Who doesn't? But you do that by generally giving them the best value. And I saw that after speaking with Andre. Andre told me, Chris, I want to tell you something. I've taken every tutorial out there that you can think of, because I want to learn from their mistakes and see how they succeed and how I can do it even better, right? And so just hearing that from you as well was really encouraging to hear.
Yeah, Andre's a beast. I mean, Andre's kind of really the one that always champions the student first, right? He's really that person who always says, you know, this is not as important. As long as the student experience is the best, that's what it is. And, you know, we have...
Disneyland experience.
I can't speak for everyone else. I can only speak for me. I can only speak for me, right? I definitely have students who dislike... Sometimes they don't like my voice. Sometimes they don't like my inflection. They don't like the way I teach the topic. They want me to teach more, right? Like there are definitely students that want that, right? But I think a lot of it too is you have to take that feedback but figure out how to be true to yourself as well. And I guess like regarding to your original question of how I manage the like juggling both full-time and the other, I think for me, right, like I work in bursts, right? Mm-hmm. Like I'm not good at that like long, super sustained, like consistent, putting in that consistency every single day type.
Yeah.
I know that I need to feel like that motivation, the inspiration. And the only way I feel that way is if I'm like, oh, I've reached the point where this is important for me to talk about or to teach it, right?
Yep.
And then of course, like crafting a course or creating something around it, I have to know that I'm like, okay, if I were to do where I was before, again, right, I'm going to make the thing that I wish I had. I wish I had at that time that would have gotten me here faster, which is what you were saying, right?
Yeah.
About wanting to help others.
Someone to guide.
It's the same thing. You were like, it took you a long time for you to get here. Let me help you get that faster.
Yeah.
I'm the same perspective about it, right? I was like, I wish I had this when I did this. Mm. Now, the other thing too is that like we're locked into our certain business models, right? In terms of our pricing for either ZTM or for Udemy. So of course you have to make something that fits to some degree into that molding, right? Like I can't do this everyday thing because like I don't, like ZTM charges a subscription base, but I'm like, you know, we don't get paid in that style, right?
Yeah.
And Udemy, you buy my course once, it's you get it forever, right?
Yeah.
I'm not like these other academies or like teachers who you consistently pay like a high price point, right? My Udemy course is like $15. You know what I mean? By the time after, like Udemy takes a portion and every like, whatever all the fees you pay.
Udemy takes
a lot.
Yeah,
and you get like $2 per course sale. Yeah. So like to me, I'm just like, it's volume is the game. But more importantly, I'm like, well, at the end of the day, what is the most value I can give somebody, right? Who is most likely going to be shopping in this field, right? Like there's a degree, right? Like we have to know our competitors and everything too, right? Like I think for me, like in my opinion, if you're going to go into like a senior engineering and you want to really zero in on like JavaScript or whatever, I actually think like Frontend Masters has like very good content in that realm for like very tight, narrow industry experts teaching you very specific things. Like if you were like, how do I know the most scalable patterns in TypeScript, right?
Because you guys don't even have courses on that right now.
No. Because, and that's the thing. I think for us, we're also trying to make sure that it's like, if we're going to do it, we have to know what we're talking about, right? Because if we were just going to learn it and then just teach it, what's the difference between, you know, I kind of feel like a charlatan, right? I feel like, that's why to me, it's so important I work because I need my students to know, hey, I'm doing this. I'm doing this thing. Mm-hmm. I've gone out there. I've proven myself. It might take longer for me to finally put out this course for you, but at the very least, I'm going to give you the assurance that I've tried it out. I've tested it. This company's crossed over this value threshold with my patterns. So at the very least, there might be other patterns out there, but I can tell you mine works. And that's always been like my guarantee is that I guarantee you it's worked before, right? It might not work in every circumstance, and I'll tell you the pitfalls of how that might happen, but I can guarantee you it's worked once.
That's amazing. I am the same way in regards to content now, right? I used to upload content maybe 3 times a week, 2 times a week. Now it's 1. If I go full-time YouTube, it'll be twice. But even when it comes to my content, I don't want to put out content just to put out content. I want to put out content I think that would generally help people. There's a purpose behind it, if not a good story behind it, that they can learn something. That is my goal in every video, but now do it to a whole nother level, right? That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I do have a few questions I want to ask real quick, like lightning fast questions. I don't know what it's called. I don't ever do this kind of stuff.
Lightning round.
There you go. Thank you.
Yeah.
Lightning round. And I don't even have the questions of mine. I'm just going to ask them out of nowhere. Okay. How long will you be a full-time engineer rather than an entrepreneur? Like how long? Sorry, hold on. When do you plan on quitting your full-time software engineering job and be a full-time entrepreneur? I'm curious. What is that? The goal date? What is that goal for you?
I'm definitely at a crossroad right now where I'm either going to the IC staff path, right, and deeper down that direction.
Yeah.
Or I have to switch towards management or I guess like a tangential kind of ladder change, right? Which is like a DevRel as you're doing or like a TPM or something like that, right? Or I start my own thing and then I see where that goes, right? I think it's a mix. As far as like being an engineer goes, I think I'll always do some of it to some degree while I'm doing coursework related to engineering, right?
Yeah.
Like for example, I wouldn't quit my job as a lead dev if I was going to do a system design course, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like I'd have to have experience and knowledge with scalable systems in order to have the confidence to even put that course out. I just don't have the kind of confidence in myself to teach something that I don't really know. So that would be one thing, but it's also opportunities, right? Depends on what comes up. So I think it's really trying to balance the responsibility that I'm holding myself to as well as the opportunities that present themselves. I'm just trying to see kind of like what's happening. And this kind of will go, I guess we can talk about this, which is like this journey about to go on is kind of part of this larger self.
Yeah, and you said you were considering, I mean, you're just like considering DevRel, et cetera, because that's what I do, create content for a living. I'll tell you this, unless you have experience creating content and what you do in technical tutorials, right, and you have experience, burnout is legit. It's real. If you work under a manager that just pushes you every day, rather than understanding that you need to slow it down. Like whenever I travel to conferences, I'm going to conference this week to AWS Anaheim in Orange County. And I'm going to take following Monday off, right? And then I'm going to Paris and London for a week and a half for big data AI. I'm going to take the day off when I come back. And then in October, I'm traveling for 3 out of 4 weeks. And I'm going to take maybe a week off after that. And I'm not even going to ask for permission.
Yeah.
Right? And so they're cool with that.
Yeah.
And so it's a lot of traveling. And traveling's different. When you travel for work, it's totally different when you're traveling for yourself. Totally different. Now, I love the points.
Yeah.
I love the points. The points is the amount of money I spend every month, like $5,000 a month on just credit cards that they reimburse. But those points are freaking amazing. But
yeah. Yeah.
It's not easy.
It's a
grind. I'll tell you that. But I don't think people realize how much you can get paid. I know people who make $2 million a year. So when I say $2 million, like maybe $300,000 base salary, rest and stock options. Stock options, some people make that in cash, right? So for just a senior engineer, Brex was going to pay me $370,000 a year. No, that was Coinbase. Brex was going to pay me $330,000. At Coinbase, if I was going to move up to staff, I would have made $450,000 a year in just DevRel, right? And of course, Coinbase is known for overworking you. Brex isn't. So depending on the company, et cetera, but of course the more money you make, the more you have to work. So for me, it's like, I can make $50,000, if not more. I know someone who gets less views than me and he makes $100,000 a month on sponsors. So like, I can work my ass off for another tech company and make $300,000 a year, maybe 500, or I can build my own thing and make a couple million. Right. So I don't want to lose that opportunity for myself personally. That's exciting then. And so I want to ask you one last question then. Just talking about the courses you make and, you know, you pretty much help students, right, get in tech. What is the biggest mistake you see them make, right? Is there something that you see them always make that just frustrates you? Is there anything that really pops out when you think of this for anyone going through those courses, you name it?
I think it's a complicated question. There's a lot of pitfalls. I think one big one is just one main one for people trying to break in. So I'll give two. One for when people are trying to get in and you're not yet working as a developer. Mm-hmm. And then one once you start working. So the first one, when you're trying to break in, one major one is you have to get really good at trying to figure out as much as you can, right? Like, and I don't mean just like the engineering work. Like, of course you have to get really good at that. Like, you have to learn how to Google the questions and get to as far as you can without asking immediately, like, what does this mean, right? You know what I mean? Like, people need to see that you've put in the work, because if you don't, you're not going to make it in this industry. This industry is pretty much all of us trying to figure it out ourselves, right?
It's a brutal industry. That's too. If you don't bring that value.
It's a brutal industry.
Yep.
I say it's like 10% people actually get a job, like people that are trying to break it through, right? Because of this reason. I think it's more this than anything. It's like, can I trust that I assign you this thing? You'll figure it out and you'll let, and you know, like you'll come to me in a way where I'm like, oh, this is a justified question versus like, I feel like you just didn't put the work in. Now, maybe you didn't because like it was crippling anxiety, whatever, right? But there are things that you have to kind of just figure out ways for yourself to overcome. You have to be more holistic as a person to get there, right?
Yep.
But you have to, but the only way to get that kind of opportunity is you have to try, right? You have to apply. You have to gun for it. You can't be crippled by your imposter syndrome.
Yep.
You have to find ways to show that you have value, rather than if it's not just engineering, maybe there's other things you're good at, right? Maybe you're good at marketing. Maybe you're good at business or something. You got to show that you can help assist the business, because they're business at the end of the day, right? Yep.
And we're receiving a lot of money.
Exactly. And they're trying to help. They're trying to hire you so that you can solve a business problem through engineering, not so that you can just be an engineer, which bleeds into my second half, which is like a common pitfall I see people that are becoming seniors, right? Is you get too attached in terms of your own identity and confidence with the quality of your code. It matters 100%. You need to know what are good patterns or whatever, but there's a reason why there's a rampant, I guess, chatter, and there's a stereotype of engineers that are too engineering, right? They're too deep in the weeds of the engineering. Mm. They can't communicate with business. Yeah. They can't communicate with non-technical stakeholders. You're over-engineering solutions. You're spending too much time, you know, doing this thing, doing that thing, right? Like, it's about balance. Like, of course, like, you know, coming from a non-technical background, you have a lot of insecurity about your technical knowledge. And 100%, there is a very, very deeply valuable and 100% required necessity to write good code, right? Scalable code. But at the same time, you have to know what corners to cut. Why are you doing this? How are you doing this, right? And like, primarily, how is this going to help the business? Should we even be building this, right?
Yep.
Is there a tool that we should use instead of building this from scratch? Is there a way that I can, you know, make this less scalable now, right? But accommodate some of the bigger concerns, right? In order for me to at least deliver something rather than like, you know, deliver perfection, which will never happen anyways, right? There's like, there's so much of this that people get bogged down by that they get stuck in this, like this trough where you never make it to senior for a long time. People are intermediates for a very long time because
that's a good
point. Yeah. And I think that is probably one of the biggest, biggest hurdles to overcome, right? And it's hard. I understand, right? Imposter syndrome is crazy. But like at the same time, the way through that is not going to be to become the greatest engineer you can, like in terms of just technical. You could, and there are definitely places where you can do that, right? But 95% of the companies you work at are probably not going to be like that. If you're in the fangs, even then, like they do have an extremely high requirement for your technical ability, but they expect you to be good at everything else too. They're not just going to be like, literally, oh, this guy's it's brilliant. Insane. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I agree.
Yeah. They're not just going to expect you to be brilliant and like get code in a corner. No, no, no. You're still going to have to be very good at delivering business value through engineering. And I think that is a very, very important thing.
And those are the people who earn the largest paychecks, to be honest. Again,
exactly.
Bringing solutions to problems. Right. So,
So
for me, it's really funny because that's what I've learned. For me, my biggest problem was not over communicating my solutions, just letting someone, you know, make the decision, even though I might know something better, held that back. Even when it comes to, even when I first joined Airbyte, I know what makes good content on YouTube, but not really defending my views, believing what I know works or not. And so now I'm doing that. And like, for example, you see those podcasts I'm doing on my at work and they said, Chris, we need more technical podcasts. And I'm like, no. People want to know the people behind the company. Just let me interview these people who work here. That's going to do really well. No, Chris. And so I just did it without the permission. I just started interviewing people. Hey, we're going to start something. And now, like, for example, the last interview got 1,000 views, which is pretty good for a company, a channel that only has 1,400 views, like subscribers. So like taking initiative and showing the way they can solve problems. And that just raise, you know, when it comes to like NBA draft, players have stock value, raise your stock value in that company and what you contribute and stuff. But same thing with engineering, et cetera. I agree 100%. Gosh, this was a fun conversation. I had a lot of fun. Was there anything that else you wanted to say before? Anything else you want to say out here on the podcast before we end it? Anything you want to bring up?
I think probably just that, like, especially for people trying to come into this industry.
Yeah.
Just know that you have value of some kind. You just have to figure out how to find the right expression for it within this industry, right? There's numerous paths that you can take in order to find a very successful career in this industry. And don't be afraid to realize that you don't like engineering either. Like, you know, people come in for the money and we've convinced ourselves that we have to, you know, we have to love engineering, but it's not like that. There's numerous ways to succeed and do very well in this industry for not just yourself, but the businesses that are hiring you too. And you just have to figure that out. And a lot of times it might be painful, but it's worth it in the end.
That is such a good point because I mean, I love tech. I like writing code. But if I had to choose between writing code, you know, all day or DevRel where I create content that can help people better use products or whatever, and I can still code there, I choose DevRel any day. I'm a software engineer, but I don't consider myself to be the best software engineer. And it's probably because I focus more on YouTube than coding. To be honest, if I didn't have YouTube, I'd be way better. But no regrets. So I learned what I really love, which is making content, and we'll see how far that can take me. If not, I can go back in software engineering and code 9 to 5. But that's such good advice. Thank you for sharing that. Oh my gosh. Yeehua. Yeehua. Wait, hold on, right? I said that right? Yeehua?
Yeah, you got it.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, cool.
So like a cowboy's yeehaw, but you flip it.
Yeehua. Yeehua. Thank you so much for being on there. Is there anywhere that people can find you in case they don't know you outside of DTM, your Twitter, you name it?
I'm really not active on social media. I'm kind of like a social media purge type of thing.
You're going the Andre route. Okay.
Yeah, I think like Andre and I both connect on that. It's just like I feel like we're just very much like don't go on social media. Don't let that impact, like, you know, your energy. At least until I figure out how to better manage my own energy that way. Mm-hmm. Mainly ZTM. We have our Discord, right? If you're in there, you can always ping me. Otherwise, I mean, if you find a way, if you find me, right, and you message me, I might respond. It just depends on what you're asking, right? So it depends at the end of the day, right? Like, it's about energy, I think.
I tried doing research on you. I could barely find you anywhere. Tried doing research on you. I'm like, what is going on? That makes sense now. That makes sense.
You know what? I'm starting a podcast soon, I think, myself. Except it'll be more around like a holistic, like being a holistic person, like a well-rounded, multifaceted person. Software is just what I do per se, but I think like much of life is about being a well-rounded individual and figuring out that, I think. So once that comes out, you know.
You should invite me. I'd be more than happy to be on there.
100%. 100%. I'm so curious to talk more to you, Chris. This has been so good to me, not just in terms of our conversation, but I'm glad that we connected because I'm very curious to get to know you more.
Yeah, no, same here. Awesome, dude. Well, Yihua, thank you so much for being on this podcast. For everyone who's watching right now, I guess you can't find Yihua anywhere, so just hit him up on Discord. And yeah, I'll see y'all next time.